You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Homefield Apparel.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important topics in the world of Indiana basketball. This is our 332nd edition of Assembly Call Radio and our 1,033rd episode overall of the Assembly Call, recorded on the evening of May 2nd, 2024, the same night that the Indiana Pacers made it to the second round of the NBA playoffs with a big win they just completed over the Milwaukee Bucks. Congratulations to them. I am your host, Jared Morris. And let's begin this edition of the Assembly Call, how we begin every edition of the Assembly Call, and that is with our Hoosier Proud banner moment.
And Indiana is the national champion.
When it comes down, Indiana will be champion.
Martin takes a shot.
The Hoosiers have won the national championship.
So this week's banner moment occurred for me on Wednesday evening when I decided to do a little digging into the stats of our newcomers. Specifically, I was curious about the demonstrated individual scoring ceilings of our projected roster for next season and how it compared to last year's scoring-challenged IU team. And here's what I found. Last season, Indiana did not have one player who played at least 40% of the minutes who entered the season with a career high above 20 points. Now let's contrast that with what we're looking at for next season's projected roster. Here are the current career-high scoring totals for Indiana's projected top six players. Miles Rice, 35 points. Malik Renu, 34 points. Kanan Carlisle, 31 points. Umar Ballo, 30. Trey Galloway, 28. Mackenzie Mbako, 24. That's six guys who have already demonstrated they can score at least 24 points in a college basketball game. If you want to know why I and many others are bullish about Indiana's offensive potential for next season, that's a big reason. The X's and O's are important, but not as important as the Jimmys and the Joes. Okay, but does it matter that rosters have demonstrated this high ceiling scoring ability before a season even starts? Well, here are two key pieces of evidence to suggest it does. If you look at every national champion since 2012, when Kentucky won with the freshman-laden Anthony Davis team, every single one of those teams had at least two key rotation pieces who entered the season with career highs of at least 25 points. And all but three of those teams had at least one key player who entered that season already with a career high of 30 or more. Next, if you look at Indiana's four best teams in that stretch, the three Sweet 16 teams plus Trace's senior season, those teams all had at least three players who had career highs of 23 or more entering the season, and at least one player who had already demonstrated he could score 30 in a game. And again, this year's Indiana team will open the season with six guys who have career highs of 24 or more points, and four of those already have career highs of 30 or more. Here's my key takeaway from this data. In a sport that continues to tilt in the direction of offense, having as many individual players who can, quote, go off on a given night is essential. In recent seasons, Indiana has had very few paths to victory. If one or two key players was shut down, it was often lights out for Indiana's chances to win. This season, Indiana will have at least one bench player with a career high of 28 or more points. How many other teams in America will enter the season with that kind of demonstrated scoring punch, all at the Power 5 level? That's what makes Indiana entering a season with this many proven bucket getters so intriguing. The Hoosiers haven't had a top 25 offense since the 2016 season, and IU's average offensive efficiency rank since 2016 is 70.5, with a low of 105 last season. Hey, I still have plenty of questions about how all of this is going to look come November, especially on defense. But I'll be very surprised if this collection of proven offensive talent doesn't coalesce into one of the 25 best offenses in the country when it's all said and done. All but one champion since 2012 has had a top 10 offense. It's about time we started building rosters with an offense-first mentality. Okay, now let me introduce my co-host this week. Coach is off, but here with me, he is the Mark Pope of Girls Youth Sports Coaching in Cincinnati, the president emeritus of the Robert Johnson Fan Club, and a bracketologist who looms over all others like he's Umar Ballo. Ladies and gentlemen, Andy Bottoms.
The best of youth sports coaching, you know that we got 'em. When it comes to analytic trends, you know he can spot them. For first-class bracketology, if you want the top, you gotta go bottoms. If you want the top, you gotta go bottoms.
If you want the top, Andy, what is your bottoms line on the last week in Indiana basketball?
Mark Pope, eh? What are you going to do?
Rude.
Mark Pope's a good coach. Come on.
He is a good coach. I've watched the Kentucky fans around here kind of warm up to him gradually over the course of time. Now, they're going to need flashcards to know who their players are since they're all new, but that's a separate that's a separate issue. As far as IU goes this week, you got the addition of Luke Goody, which I think I know we'll talk about later, I think is fills some skill-related needs and positional needs for the team. So I think it's a good addition for a guy who clearly kind of had it in his blood with some of the old pictures that he had posted as he did that. So somebody who will be excited to be with the program and be able to contribute. And it's been a guy who's been a role player on successful teams. I think that bodes well as you look at it that way. And then the other thing coming out of the schedule, I think it, between looking at UCLA and USC, Oregon and Washington being listed among there, and then I was listening to Three Man Weave while I was mowing the yard tonight, and they're going through different conferences, and they're like, oh, and they're, get to the Big 12. Oh, let's talk about Arizona and whatever. And it's like, what? And then, obviously the natural fit of Cal to the ACC, hearing them discuss there. So a lot of weird changes. So this is just, as schedules roll out, the first chance to really start to come to grips with that's actually happening this season. And we'll figure it out from there. But that's, kind of the two big pieces of news in the IU sphere this week.
And also here with me, ladies and gentlemen, he is a senior writer for the Big Gist brand in sports writing. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, our Ryan Phillips, now a senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Very, very exciting. Ryan, congrats on the new gig, man.
Thank you. Are you going to no music for this? Let's just go right in.
No, we'll do music. Sorry, that was kind of awkward. I just wanted to congratulate you and, all that stuff. But here's your song.
Analyzing players, finding every wrinkle. He hasn't ever hosted, never lifted a finger. He's got all the
answers. Let me quickly add just one thing about this.
Dude just interrupted his own jingle.
So what would you like to rant or ruminate on this week?
I just wanted Bob to get his song in because he's such a big part of it.
We appreciate that. It's a great song.
First of all, just thanks to everybody who's reached out about my new job. I'm very excited. It's sort of been my dream since I was about 10 years old, and no pressure. Now you've got what you wanted. Good luck. Kind of like Indiana getting me a shooter. It's this week. So it's been nothing but good news. But thank you. A lot of people have reached out. It's been very, very nice of everybody to do that. I guess from this week, it is Luke Goody getting added. We asked for a shooter. They gave a shooter. And I've had a lot of people say like, oh, they finally got a shooter, Ryan. You can stop talking. I was like, no, I'd like another one, please. Like, if you can, like, please go get one more. But I do think really what's left is a backup rim protector of some kind, I think is really the only thing, preferably somebody with multiple years so they can sit and then, sort of slide into that position when Ballo's gone. But it's been a good week. I mean, about the last couple of weeks have been good. I was on Crimson Cast with Scott this week, and we talked about it. And it's and go listen to the episode. It was, two co-pilots, no pilot, as he likes to call it. So it kind of wanders. But they have done a really good job addressing their needs in the portal. You cannot there's no way to look at this grouping and think it's bad. I mean, they have gone out and addressed their needs. They've spent a lot of money to do so, and they've addressed their need, filled their needs to the point where you're now getting it set up. And this is, obviously a guess to where we've said for 2 years, we think Trey Galloway has been starting, and we love Trey Galloway and what he provides. But the stuff he provides is the stuff a sixth man provides. And that is probably his best role. And you now have a starting lineup that looks like that is what is going to happen, and you're finally getting people to the right level of playing time. And now with Luke Goody in there, Trey Galloway doesn't have to be the guy you hope can shoot on that second unit. You've got a guy who is a proven shooter. It's not just that you've made shots. It's that he's done it for years and has done it successfully for years. And I think that's the difference is, you have potential with Rice and Carlisle to shoot better than they have. Well, Goody's done it, and he's done it in the Big Ten against top competition. And so you know it's there. You're not having to project it. So I think that's a big add for Indiana. They're not done yet. I know they've got to get at least one more piece, probably two. And we'll see how that shakes out over the next couple weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, here's what we have in store this week. We will start out talking about the schedule as well as the new IU team for the basketball tournament, which is very exciting. And then we're going to give our Luke Goody scouting report and have some fun with lineup combinations after that. All that coming this week on Assembly Call Radio. But first, let's talk about our presenting sponsor. That's right. This edition of Assembly Call Radio, just like all shows on the Back Home Network, presented by our friends at Home Field Apparel, where they have the largest collection of vintage IU apparel that you will find anywhere, like this snapback hat with the old IU Bison logo on it. It's not just IU. Of course, Home Field has unique, interesting designs printed on the softest, most comfortable fabrics for over 150 colleges and universities. And it's not even just colleges and universities. They also do, you know, fun special promotions. They've got a whole bunch of Indy 500 gear coming out right now. So make sure that you go check that out. I recently received my Little 500 bomber jacket and snapback hat, which I love. In fact, I'll model the other Little 5 hat right here. I didn't want to wear it for the whole episode because it's going to mess up the white balancing of the video, but I love this hat. It's got the little string coming around the front, the awesome Little 500 logo. It's candy striped. It's just a beautiful hat. Beautiful like everything that Home Field Apparel does. That's why you need to be following them on Twitter, subscribe to their email list, getting the text alerts, so that whenever they do have flash sales, you can make sure that you get those codes and save as much money as possible. But the bottom line is, no matter what you buy, you know it will be comfortable. You know the colors are going to last through many washings. And you're supporting an Indiana-based company that came up through Kelly. And there's nothing better than that. So go to homefieldapparel.com. Use our promo code HOME23 to get 15% off your entire first order. That's promo code HOME23 for 15% off. Again, the website, homefieldapparel.com. Wear one for the team. And by the way, speaking of the Back Home Network, we do have a Pacers show on the Back Home Network now, hosted by Scott Caulfield and Tony Adranya. It's called Right Up Meridian. And what better time to subscribe than right now, with the Pacers on a playoff run, as we said, just beating the Milwaukee Bucks to move on to the second round. Go search for Right Up Meridian wherever you listen to podcasts, then you will find it. Of course, check out our friends at Crimson Cast. Check out our friends at Doing the Work as well. And X's and Joe's out with a new episode where they talked about the transfer portal, some misconceptions, some myths, in their own special, unique way of discussing them. So make sure that you're subscribed to all of those shows on the Back Home Network. All right, guys, let's start by talking about the schedule. Andy, you mentioned this. We don't have the full schedule, but we do have Indiana's Big Ten opponents have been revealed. And it is much different, and we can kind of talk about the ramifications of having an 18-team conference that is playing 20 games and how the unbalanced schedule might affect, you know, the regular season Big Ten title when there are only three home and teams that you basically double plays, that you play home and away. So Indiana will play Purdue twice, Penn State twice, and Ohio State twice. I think that's actually a pretty good draw. We can talk about that here in a minute. But Indiana's home-only opponents are Illinois, Maryland, Michigan, Minnesota, Rutgers, plus UCLA and USC. And the away-only opponents are Iowa, Michigan State, Nebraska, Northwestern, Oregon, Washington, and Wisconsin. So, Andy, a few obvious...
that streak again.
Well, so a few takeaways. Look, Indiana does get to go to Wisconsin, and with all the issues they've had this offseason, it certainly feels like a year where that streak could end. Knock on wood, all the superstitions. I'm sure they'll find some way to pull it out in the end, but we should have a good chance. But we don't have to go to the rack, which is nice. I got to say, seeing UCLA play in Assembly Hall is going to be kind of cool. Just seeing
they should play at the arena from Blue Chips. That's
just seeing those two uniforms on that court will be awesome. But Andy, the thing that really stood out to me, you know, when you look at those double plays, you know, obviously Purdue without Zach Edey, we all still think that they'll be good. I don't think they'll be at the same elite level that they've been. Those are always going to be challenging games. Ohio State has seemingly done a nice job in the portal, you know, this season and with recruiting, but they've got a first-year coach, so who knows exactly what that's going to look like. And I honestly have no idea what Penn State's roster is shaping up to be. And obviously they beat us twice last year, so I don't want to be overconfident. But it seems like that's a relatively decent draw just in terms of how we project these teams right now. What were your thoughts when you saw the opponents for next season?
I mean, obviously it's harder than ever to really project much of anything when you look at stuff with the schedule, because there's still a lot of dominoes to fall. But I think in general, as you said, felt like of the teams you're only playing once, you had more of the tougher teams at home than on the road. And then the double plays, as you said, Purdue's going to be tough regardless. Penn State going to go through a decent amount of change just because they lose. They don't lose Ace Baldwin. How is that possible?
T-back.
But so they lose a few guys. Apparently, I was looking. Alex is doing the Lord's work by trying to track these the comings and goings in the Big Ten. So I was going to that.
What else is he
going
to do? Watch baseball?
He has eligibility remaining.
Alex has time on his hands this spring.
I mean, this is true. But so anyway, they've got a number of transfers that they've added. So a lot of different pieces there. I think a little bit hard to totally get a feel for them. And then Ohio State, I think it'll be interesting to see. They got a boost when they made the move from Chris Holtman to Jake Diebler, but they've had a bunch of churn as well. So they've had some key additions, I think, but they've also lost a few guys as well. Losing Roddy Gale in particular, I think, is going to be a big one, in Okpara. So, but they had some good gains as well. So a little bit, a lot of revolving doors there, just like a ton of other places. So, but not terrible if you look at the double plays. And it seemed like in general what you think you know about these teams right now, in general, some of the teams that would project a bit lower are the ones you've got on the road. So not bad overall. It seemed like they did a good job from a scheduling standpoint of basically where, like, everybody either goes and takes a trip to play the teams in the Pacific Northwest or takes a trip to play the LA schools and vice versa. So I think
said that's what they're going to do.
That's what they did do.
The old Pac-12. Yeah.
They're doing the same thing. And like, so IU goes and plays at Oregon and Washington. Presumably they'll play close together and just not
Thursday, Sunday,
fly back and forth.
Yeah.
But then UCLA and USC come to IU. So it seems like a good way to handle that. Now that doesn't help. That doesn't help the schools on the West Coast to have to fly and do the other stuff. But I think they managed it about as well as they could on the other side of things. So
they did it for the money. They're going to deal with it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Ryan, USC coming to Assembly Hall. If that game is played in February on a Saturday, it's going to have to be the meetup game, right?
Yeah, I'm good with it. I'll root for Indiana. That's not USC football and Indiana football. If I'm not doing an Indiana football show, I'm going to root for USC. Like, that's just, I've been there. I've rooted for them far longer. As far as basketball goes, it's nice when USC is good, but I don't have any loyalty there. I knew a bunch of guys on the football team at USC, so I became a big USC football fan. The schedule, I mean, I do think they did well here. I mean, you get Michigan State and Wisconsin on the road. That trip to Oregon and Washington is going to suck. No matter how good those teams are, I wouldn't be shocked if that long trip you lose both games just because it's a pain. I think that it's going to take time for programs to dial in how to do that best and how to, spend your time while you're out there and how to schedule practices and how to schedule your walkthrough and all of that. Like, the time change. Okay, when do we get started? When do we do this? The games are going to be later, than you're
maybe that's
to.
Where Mike Woodson's NBA experience will come in handy.
It could help. I mean, honestly, it could. And here's the thing is, I guarantee you there's going to be one team that you don't expect has it dialed in early and figured out, and teams that you think should be really good going out there get the doors blown off them because they're just not used to doing it. And that's going to happen across the country with all these different, teams going to different places, figuring out the town, where to stay, what to do, all of that stuff, where to eat, I think that you're going to start to see teams dial it in and figure it out, but it might take time. And I think it's going to go both ways. It's going to go for the teams coming from the West Coast, the teams going East. I mean, Rutgers has to fly all the way to, you know, is going to, I don't know what their schedule is. I didn't check, but they're going to have to go all the way to Los Angeles at some point for 5 days or whatever it's going to be. And then USC and UCLA got to go there in Maryland, probably. I mean, that's probably the pairing. So it's going to be interesting to see how that gets handled. As far as the home and away, I think you got a really good split there. With you get Purdue, is going to be tough. Even with Zach Edey gone, they'll be tough. Ohio State, good roster, as we said. We're going to learn if Jake Diebler can coach or if it was just a late season, you know, kind of energetic burst. And then getting Penn State as your home and home. We play terrible there, but still, I mean, you know, there are a lot of good teams in the Big Ten. And I think you feel pretty good about that being the third you got there.
Yep. So in other exciting news this week, for those of you who aren't familiar with the basketball tournament, this is an off-season tournament that happens with teams filled with alumni of other college teams. And they play, I think it's up to a 64-team tournament now, if I'm correct on that. A lot of the games are televised. I think they play for $1 million. They use the Elam ending at the end. It's a really fun tournament, but it hasn't really been that fun for Indiana fans because we haven't had an alumni team in there, which seems ridiculous given the brand of Indiana basketball, how many terrific alumni players we have. Well, the Hoosiers are back. Interestingly enough, Indiana is now the only school with a team in the basketball tournament and the soccer tournament, which is interesting because there are two of those tournaments. But the first three players announced on the IU alumni team, Miller Kopp, Troy Williams, and Jawan Morgan, which is a nice, interesting little trio there. And now we await the other names.
Get a point guard.
I saw Devontae Green retweeted it. He would be an obvious choice to potentially be on there. And so the team is called Assembly Ball. That account tweeted out, you know, something earlier and tagged Victor Oladipo with a big eye emoji talking about if he wanted to play. Have heard some rumors there. Have no idea if they're credible or not. But it's going to be interesting to see who else fills out that roster. But I'm just excited to see some of these guys play again, you know, playing together, you know, kind of guys from different eras. So it should be fun. Andy, any thoughts on the basketball tournament team for Indiana? Andy's muted. He's so excited.
That's usually my move.
Yeah.
I was saying that I feel like they had talked about it a year or two ago. I think it's been talked about multiple times having a team, but it's never come to fruition. And I think Holes played in it a few times under a different team, but
yeah, it was like Armored Athlete had some players.
Yeah. And I quite honestly haven't watched it as much in the last couple of years just because, you know, I think I would care a lot more if there was an IU team in it. So excited to see who else they can get to fill out the roster as they go through, and kind of some interesting, like you said, interesting combinations of guys from different regimes and things like that. But good to have a shooter like Miller Kopp already in the fold. And so we'll see what happens from there. I would love to see like a grown up version of Troy Williams. Is it still the like good Troy, bad Troy scenario? Where are we at there? Having watched him play for a while, so we'll kind of see what happens there.
Sore knees, Troy, or something like that at this point, because he's a veteran. No, I looked up where Troy was playing because I figured he was still playing if he was going to do this. And last year, he played for the Taiwan Beer. That's the mascot, Beer. Love it. So isn't that apparently he's overseas?
Well, a lot of the teams over there, even like the Japanese baseball teams,
sponsorship.
Yeah, so they.
But
yes.
Oh, yeah, awesome. The affiliation, the Taiwan Beer Hero Bears.
So it's Taiwan Beer is the sponsor.
Yes.
And they're the Hero Bears.
But it's listed as Taiwan Beer, Taiwan Beer basketball team. So
yeah,
that's funny. But yeah, I that'll be fun. It'll be really fun to watch. You know, Troy played in the NBA as recently as like 2019. He was on Sacramento, I remember, and then he just kind of bounced around after that. And Jawan Morgan is in Russia right now, I believe, the last I saw. So he's St. Petersburg, I think. So yeah, he's still active and playing. Kopp was in the G League this year and had some really good performances. Fell off a little towards the end, but had some real good performances early on. So he's ready to go. And yeah, gotta go find some extra guys. Need somebody to handle the ball with that group.
Yeah. You know, it'd be interesting. Yogi, could he be a possibility? Al Durham's been playing really well in Germany. You know, so who knows? It's obviously all based on availability and just what these guys have going on. A few people have asked, will we do post-game shows after these games? Can't make promises, but I mean, if they're at a good time and we can get together, absolutely. It'd be fun to do a post-game show after one of those. So we'll just have to see Yogi, when the schedule comes out.
Yogi is currently in Montenegro. I just looked that
Montenegro.
Up.
Montenegro. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we should
Shanghai
see
Sharks last year.
Yeah. We should see more announcements rolling out. And so we'll see. We'll watch with interest to see who else is going to complete this team. And then the other big news from this week, Indiana's apparel partnership with Adidas. It seems like it will be extended for 10 more years. I know Scott Dolson did an interview with the Hoosier Hysterics and talked about they had a verbal agreement. Zach Osterman confirmed that for the Indy Star. Ryan, do you have any hot sports opinions on Indiana re-upping with Adidas for the next 10 years?
I know a lot of people are disappointed they didn't switch to something like Nike, but I do think for Adidas, Indiana will be one of its top schools, especially in basketball. You know, it's basically Kansas, Indiana. What's the other one? Is Louisville?
Wasn't Louisville Adidas?
I don't know. I think they're Adidas.
I think so. Yeah.
But, you know, that's
like Brian Bowen, I think, back in the.
Yeah. Right. I don't know if they're still with him, but I know they were. But
against Rick Pitino's wishes, Andy, he did not sanction that.
That was the easiest recruitment he ever had. Somehow he just fell into his lap. He had no idea how it happened. Yeah.
How do you, I mean, things just fall into your lap. It happens with recruits or in Italian restaurants. It's wherever. but no, I mean, look, I figure, you know, if they'd gone with Nike, I don't think Jordan Brand would have been there, but if they'd gone with Nike or something like that, they wouldn't be one of the top programs that the apparel partner has, because their programs with both football and basketball at a certain level that they're going to invest more time into. So Adidas, Indiana is one of its top basketball schools. So I get it makes sense. I know a lot of people are disappointed with the apparel, but hopefully with this new contract, maybe they can, you know, push for change there a little bit.
Does the soccer element make a difference with Adidas? Like, do they want Indiana more because of soccer?
Maybe, but I just don't think there's enough revenue in it for it to matter. I think that basketball is the focus. I could be wrong there. I'm not an expert on these things, but I would think that college soccer, while I love it and I enjoy watching IU soccer team play, I don't think it moves the needle as much as the other things to any level. So,
well, they certainly don't have apparel for it out in a way that suggests
exactly
it matters. So,
yeah, I would think the youth national team gets more, you know, national push and publicity than that. Yeah. So I think that would be their focus.
Yeah, that's probably true. Okay. Well, coming up here on Assembly Call Radio, it is time to talk Luke Goody. You did not recruit him out of high school, but he is returning to his roots, with a lot of people saying he's a perfect fit for this IU roster. Is he? We will discuss that next on the Assembly Call.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to everybody who is here live. Thank you for dealing with us having a bit of a delayed start. We will Assembly Call Radio start times now, somewhere in the window between 9 and 9:30 is what we should be thinking about. My son's bedtimes are just a little bit later. So if it's ever if I'm ever past 9:30, we'll just start it. They'll start it without me, but otherwise, just to give you a heads up for future scheduling. If I can ever get back to bed before 8 consistently, then we can go back to that time. But
for those who celebrate, Knicks up on the Sixers by 5 in the second quarter. That series has been insane.
They were up by a billion when I looked at it early in the game.
It was like
28-9 at one point.
Yeah, I think it was like 15-18. Yeah, but yeah, that has closed down a little bit. That series has been nuts. Just the fans alone.
There's been some good first round series. I mean, the Lakers Nuggets games were at least
all of those were good games. Yeah. It's interesting. Mavs Clippers has been good. The Lakers Nuggets thing is so funny because they lost last year. The Lakers lost last year, lost this year. But they were the team that gave the Nuggets the best run last year. They had 4 straight competitive games. They just lost them all because the Nuggets know how to close. I mean, Jamal Murray is unbelievable at the end. It seems like every time he winds up with the ball in his hands and she has to take the lead late. And
not if he goes up against the Knicks. He won't be.
Yeah, OG will be right there for him. It'll be interesting to see what happens because Denver they were really good this year, but they didn't look like the dominant force they did in the postseason last year. I think they were just waiting to turn it on, honestly. And I if I had to pick, they would be my favorite to win it all, even over the Celtics. Because I don't know who the Celtics are going to – I don't know who they're going to run it, Jokic.
I don't trust the Celtics.
I don't either. I think they're a great regular season team. They were constructed like a great regular season team. Yes. And you see that every year, every other year, that there's this amazing regular. I know they don't fit into this category. Remember, the Warriors set the wins record and didn't win the title. You know, I mean, it's sometimes it's not the best regular season team. So,
yep. All right. Let's jump into segment 2. Here we go.
Hi, this is Jawan Morgan. What's the only thing better than getting IU's first triple-double in 47 years? Celebrating it with friends afterwards. Join Jared, Andy, Ryan, and Coach on the assembly call after every IU basketball game. Go Hoosiers.
Alrighty, thank you, Jawan. Welcome back to the assembly call. I'm Jared Morse here with Andy Bottoms and Ryan Phillips. And gentlemen, we have not convened an episode since Indiana's last commitment, which came from Luke Goody, who is transferring from Illinois to Indiana. An intra Big Ten transfer here for Luke Goody. Obviously from the state of Indiana, has very deep ties to Indiana University. His uncle is Trent Green, one of the great quarterbacks in IU football history, who went on to have a great NFL career. His dad played football at Indiana. I think his mom may have been an athlete at IU as well. But very, very deep ties to Indiana University. But Archie Miller chose not to recruit him. And so he went to Illinois, didn't play a ton his first couple of years, Andy, but really came on last year and excelled in a low usage role on a high octane offense. I mean, Illinois ended up having, did they end up finishing number one in Ken Palm?
They were number one. They were number one before they played Connecticut. I don't know what it turned out to be.
Going on a 30-0 run against Connecticut.
Not after that, but I'm not 100%.
They spent a good portion of the season at number one. Not sure what the Connecticut steamroller.
They finished third.
Connecticut was number one.
Yeah. Okay, Connecticut steamrolled them down to 3.
Yeah, if you wanted to telegraph that Connecticut was going to win a national title, it wasn't that they scored 30 points in a row. It was that they held Illinois to zero for what was 50 minutes of actual time, not playing time, but actual time, because it was over the half.
The number one offense in the country at the time.
Yeah, just held them 0 points for like an hour.
That Connecticut team, man. So last season, Luke Goody played 50.1% of minutes. So he had a very solid, consistent role. Usage was very low, but his offensive rating was 124, which was top 100 in the country. You know, you think about guys like Nick Zeisloft and others that are kind of designated shooters, don't use a whole lot of possessions, but are very effective at making shots when they get it. And that's what Luke Goody did. He made 38.9% of his threes on solid volume, 157. And my favorite stat from kind of digging into the numbers from last season, Andy, is he made at least 2 threes in 17 of Illinois' 38 games, which really shows good consistency and ability to not just come in and hit one, but to hit multiple in that many games. You know, for a team like Indiana that has just been so far down in 3-point volume, having a guy, again, who's demonstrated he can do that. And I think that's the word that we're using a lot more this offseason than we have before, which is demonstrated ability to do things. Last season, there was so much offseason talk. Theoretically, CJ Gunn could do this and Caleb Banks might do this and a lot of kind of projecting guys into new roles. Now we're basically saying this guy's already done this. We're just projecting him onto a new team, but we're not wondering if he can do it at this level. We've seen him do it at this level. And that, I think, is the most encouraging aspect of Luke Goody for a program that needs a shooter. He is a shooter. He's demonstrated it. And, you know, look, he's not, we're going to talk lineups here in a little bit. He doesn't project to be a starter, but he's a really useful piece when you kind of start mixing and matching lineups, because he's a little taller than people think. He's 6'7". And the other number that really stood out is four of Illinois' top 10 lineups over the final five games. So basically, you know, NCAA tournament, they're very important games. Four of their top 10 most used lineups had Luke Goody at the four. So he is a guy who can drop down to the four. He's a pretty good rebounder along with his shooting. And that's going to give Mike Woodson a lot of options when it comes to how you kind of build lineups around him and who you pair him with. So, Andy, your thoughts on the addition of Luke Goody?
I think a good fit because he's going to be asked to play a pretty similar role to what he's already done and played well. So I think, again, you look at demonstrated skill and production and all those things, I think that becomes even easier to translate into what should be a pretty similar role on IU's team. And I think he does, with the size, give a little bit of flexibility. If you think back to Illinois last year, Dane Danger was kind of, you know, MIA for a while. Then they started to use him a little bit more, it seemed like, toward the end of the season based on the matchup. So, but Goody did play some at the four when they had Hawkins essentially playing like a small five and different things like that. And I think he's one who was able to benefit a lot from the different ways that Illinois could get to the basket, whether it was, you know, booty ball with Damask, or it was, you know, drives from Shannon or Hawkins, things like that. I think he was able to benefit from some of the same scenarios that you could see him benefiting from at IU based on what the personnel is. So I think a guy who will step in, do a little bit of everything for you, can guard a couple of different positions, decent rebounder, as you're in there, and a guy who helps you space the floor offensively with the ability to make shots. And I think knowing that, as you said, you're not projecting or hoping for a step forward from somebody, that if he continues to do what he's done already, provides an interesting element for IU offensively.
Yeah, Ryan, you look at his usage last season, 77% of his usage came on half-court spot-ups, offensive rebound putbacks, or shots in transition. So he's not doing a whole lot with the ball. You know, he's moving the ball, he's setting screens, he's finding open spaces to get shots. And, you know, the other thing that really jumped out is, you know, when you start kind of playing around with lineups that Illinois used last year and looking at different net ratings based on who was on, who was off, there was never like a big net rating jump when Goody was on the court. It was pretty stable with their normal net rating, which is kind of the point. That's kind of what you want for the role player. There was no big drop off. It just kept humming along when he was on there. And that's been such a big problem for Indiana, having bench guys who can sustain that level of play. It's another reason why this is such an important get for the Hoosiers.
And here's an interesting thing, is from January 27th, he had 11 points against Indiana. From then until the end of the season, he broke double figures one time. He had 12 against Nebraska in the Big Ten tournament, but that was when they dropped 98 on Nebraska. But in that time, even though he wasn't scoring at volume, you know, he didn't have any explosive games off the bench, which he's capable of because of his shooting. But the offense, but the lineups he was in were still very successful. Why, and what does that say about him? It says he helped spread the floor for other guys. I mean, that's what you have to infer from that, is that his presence didn't hurt you, even though he wasn't scoring. The reason why is because he provides value even when he's not scoring. And that value, to me, seems like it would be spreading the floor and keeping, you know, you can't leave him. You cannot leave him. And I know a lot of people have made comparisons to Miller Kopp because of their size, their shooting skill. Goody's release is much faster than Miller's. And he, I'll say this about him, and Miller had struggled a bit at Northwestern before he came to Indiana, and they struggled his first year at Indiana a little bit. And then he kind of got it together his final year. Goody, and I've had this problem, and I've mentioned it with Indiana shooters. Goody doesn't think about it. He just shoots. He's confident that he's going to make it. And a lot of Indiana shots, even when they're open, you can tell guys just don't have the confidence in their shot, or they overthink it, or they're taking their time and being really slow about it. He catches and shoots, and he doesn't think about it. He just does it. And that's something that Indiana has been missing for a long time, is just somebody who has that level of confidence from beyond the arc, and he's got it. And how will that translate in Indiana? We don't know. He's going to be fitting into a different offense. Illinois is very wide open, and it's not post heavy. It's not those things. It's, you know, as post heavy as the way Indiana plays. So how does that translate? We don't know. What we do know is that when he gets the ball and has room, he's going to shoot it. And that's going to be the first option when he catches it for him. It's not going to be a, nobody's open. All right, I'm going to shoot. You know, it's going to be, if I have room, I'm shooting this because I'm open. And I feel like there's a lot of guys on Indiana's roster who don't do that. Or who look for a different shot, who look for a long two or something like that. We've seen guys wide open pass up open threes for the last 3 years. He's not going to do that. And if that's going to upset people when he misses a few, you're missing the point of why he's on the floor, because the defense cannot sag off of him, cannot pack the paint and leave him open. So he provide, again, the thing about him is, no matter how many points he scores, he will provide value when he's on the floor, no matter what he's doing. Defensively, he's going to have some issues here and there, just from the physical issues. But there is effort there. He runs the floor too, because he knows he's going to get a shot as a kickback sometimes if he runs the floor on offense. And you're right, he does do a little bit on the putback game and things like that, but he's not going to go off the dribble. He can, if you close out hard, ball fake and get reset and get a shot. Not his game though. He's a catch and shoot guy. That's what I feel like is all he wants to do.
Yeah, he seems to be, you know, more looking to shot fake and then find someone to pass to, you know, as opposed to,
yes,
you know, similar to Miller Kopp. You're not going to see him take more than one or two dribbles very often. You know, and you brought up some of the differences with Kopp. I think there are some differences, but it's a useful, I think, analogy for fans to use if you're kind of trying to project what role will he have. Now, I don't think
same size, shooters.
And I think Andy, you know, again, the way that Goody fits in offensively is, I mean, it's obvious, and how he fills that need. And we've spent a whole lot of time talking about the offense. You know, I continue to have lots of questions about how this is all going to work defensively. I think Goody is similar to Kopp defensively in that he knows where to be. He's a smart, you know, kind of high awareness defender. And so in team defense situations, you know, he's good. And just having a guy like that, that's been around for 4 years, is experienced, that will be valuable, you know, especially for some new guys that are going to be playing for the first time in the Big Ten. If he gets isolated, you can take advantage of him. You know, he's going to, you know, get driven, some things like that. But he's going to be solid, kind of like Kopp was, you know, from a defensive standpoint. Your thoughts on just Goody from a defensive, from the defensive angle?
Yeah, I think you're right. And some of those questions just about overall defense, I think, are important ones that we'll have to try to figure out what the answer is going to be, or how the staff is going to try to answer those as you go. I think he's a guy who can guard threes and fours. I think probably is a little bit more effective guarding fours. I mean, in some cases in the Big Ten, that's difficult, but he's got decent enough size where he can kind of hold his own against a guy like that versus being able to try to slow down.
Depends on the floor. Wings. I don't think he's stopping Malik Renew. But
well, no, but I mean, in general, yeah. I mean, I think in general, he's probably just more comfortable in that scenario, yeah, as you look at it there. But I do think a lot of what you talked about with Kopp, at least positionally, you know, from help defense and things like that, I think will be fine. But yeah, I think you'll be able, you know, have to figure out how to use him in different lineups. In a lot of ways, it's, you know, I think you could make ask some of the same questions about guarding threes as you might ask about Mbako, quite honestly, who struggled with that a little bit. I think for potentially different reasons, Goody can't struggle in the same way.
Only shot 65.2% from the line last year, Ryan.
Yeah. Funny things.
Sound the alarm.
As a sophomore, he played in 10 games, averaged 13.8 minutes per game, and shot 2 free throws. Made them both, though. So that's good. But yeah, he was only 15 of 23 last year, which doesn't look that bad on paper, but yeah, that's 65%. But
yeah, he's very low usage from the line.
Yes, and he's not in. I don't think that's going to change. I mean, you look at his field goal percentage last year was 39.7. 3-point was 38.9. So you're he's shooting threes. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, he basically has my high school basketball profile. He's taken 219 threes and 46 twos in his college career. That's pretty, sounds about right.
Yeah.
We know what he's out there to do.
He has a thing and he sticks with it.
Is there any downside to this addition? I mean,
you worry about defense, but he's going to be a bench player and defense matters far less off the bench when you're facing other bench players. So I think, you know, if he gets thrust into a situation where he's got to start for a long time, you do think about, okay, foot speed, things like that. But also with more time will come more opportunities to hit threes. So, but no, I think he's very one dimensional. He has a high basketball IQ, knows where to be, all of that stuff, but he's pretty one dimensional. And so if he is forced into extended time, that's where you start to worry about things like that. Can he, if Mbaku gets into foul trouble and you got to go to Goody for 30 minutes, you know, what's that even look like? And he's a veteran, so he'll probably be able to, you know, almost like fake his way to it with just savvy. But that's the question, is how much is he going to have to play? Because you're looking at it as, you know, sort of a second unit situation. And honestly, on the second unit, if you're looking at what they have right now, he might be the four on the second unit. I mean,
yes.
And they'd have to go four out, one in, because there really isn't any, there aren't any backup big men. Essentially, it's all guards. So you're kind of pigeonholed there.
We'll take that. Yes, pigeonholed.
I'm fine with that. I just don't want a situation where we see him running block to block screens and, you know, taking the high post. No, get him out on the floor, please.
All right, so let's dive in. We're skipping the mailbag this week. The mailbag will be back next week. We'll probably do an all mailbag episode here coming up. But, you know, now that we have Goody, and I think you can really, I mean, you know, the top eight is really taking shape. You know, obviously you got Miles Rice, Kanan Carlisle, Mackenzie Mbako, Malik Renu, Umar Ballo, and Trey Galloway, which is the clear top six. You got Bryson Tucker, who, you know, it's really interesting. You know, and I still don't really know what to expect from him. You know, 24/7 had him as a four-star. On Three came out with their recruiting rankings. He was one of their 14 five-stars. He was rated higher than Liam McNeely, Derek Queen, and Boogie Fland in the On Three rankings, which...
That's a little crazy.
I thought so, too.
I've seen those other guys play. Like, I like Tucker, but I think he's a borderline 4-5. And those other guys, I think, are all fives.
Yeah, and look, sure, like, you look at his high school numbers from last year, which are available on Synergy, and the types of things that you would be looking for that would translate... The numbers weren't great just in terms of shooting and some of the other splits, but you know, this kid is big, he's long, he's clearly a hard worker, has the pedigree, you know, so I have no idea if we're underselling him, overselling him, but he's clearly kind of, you know, in, you know, whatever top line of bench guys you have. So you put him seventh, you got Luke Goody eighth, and then, you know, I think we're all kind of holding a spot for a backup big. And then, you know, Andy, after that, you've got Gabe Cupps, who has experience as a point guard. You've got Anthony Leal, who at a minimum proved that he can provide replacement level minutes at the 3 and 4, can make big plays late, you know, maybe even, you know, slightly above replacement level. And then Jakai Newton, who's just maybe the biggest wild card in the conference. I mean, you just don't know what he's going to be able to give you. But all these players, especially when you look at those top eight, there's a lot of really kind of interesting, fun lineup combinations that start to reveal themselves when we look at this. So I emailed you guys earlier today to come up with your favorite lineups, you know, as you kind of start moving the pieces around. And I'm curious to see what kind of overlap there is between some of these, because I think when you start moving them around, there's a few pretty obvious ones that become fun. So, Andy, let me go to you first. As we start talking about lineup combinations, what's kind of the first one that jumps out to you, whether it's a starting lineup or one that involves bench guys that you're especially intrigued by?
Yeah, the one that I wrote down first, so I guess this means it's the one I'm most intrigued by, or at least it's the one I thought of first, would be Rice, Carlisle, Galloway, Mbako, and Ballo.
Yes.
I think that's one where you've got three guys who can kind of create a bit. Mbako at the four is going to be a theme of at least a couple of the ones that I came up with.
The NBA Finals are heating up. Looking for hot takes on all the postseason action? The Old Man and the Three, presented by BMW, is the podcast to listen to for the ultimate finals coverage. Host and former NBA sharpshooter J.J. Redick not only has a plugged-in perspective on the action from his time in the league, but he's also announcing the games in real time for ESPN. J.J. has the ultimate insider point of view, and he's taking you along for the ride as he breaks down the best defensive schemes, dunks, and drives from each game. And speaking of incredible drives, there's no better place to tune into your new favorite podcast, The Old Man and the Three, than in a standard-setting BMW. Luxury meets power to create a wholly new driving experience. Push the limits this NBA season with the brand that set the ultimate standard, BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number smart beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com. /awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
And then I think Balo in that group, one, helps you out defensively by being able to be the rim protector, but I think he's also better in some of the other situations if you want to run pick and rolls and different things like that to try to space things out. So I think that one, just as you have, you know, think about the ability to attack closeouts from different positions and really get the ball moving. You know, a few guys who have a decent amount of experience with, you know, being playmakers. I think that's the one that probably intrigues me the most. And then, you know, think of Mbako into his next year and doing some of those things. So I think that's the one that offensively, at least, is pretty exciting when you put that group together.
Yeah, I wrote a piece on our Substack, you know, kind of highlighting some of the most intriguing lineup combinations. And that was one of them. And that's the one that I called the attacking lineup. Because you're right, Andy, when you have Rice, Galloway, and Carlisle, you have three guys around the perimeter. You know, again, you know, we've got to see, you know, how the shooting develops. I think it's, you know, I have some confidence that Rice and Carlisle are going to be shooters. We know Galloway's been up and down. So, you know, how efficient those guys are from three-point range will help determine how effective that lineup is. But you got three guys that are really effective running the pick and roll. You've got McKenzie Mbako, who's going to keep the floor spaced. And if you're going to run pick and rolls, you want to do it with Balo over Renu, because he's just been better at that. And Andy, I think as you said, the rebounding and the defense, Balo really helps. But if at least two of Rice, Galloway, and Carlisle prove to be credible three-point threats that the defense can't leave, that is a ridiculously strong offensive lineup, because you can attack from any guard position. You can run pick and rolls anywhere. And then you've got Mbako, who we know has the outside game, showed, you know, the ability to drive a little bit. That lineup, Ryan, just has, I mean, it has way more dimensionality than any lineup we've seen in the last 7 years, even just projecting it forward on paper right now.
Agreed. And that was one of mine. And it was sort of Balo and Renu are a little interchangeable there. But you're right that Balo is much better in pick and roll. But conversely, Renu could pick and pop, because especially if his shooting continues to develop. Hold so that's thought. Kind of interchangeable for me. The one that I liked, and you have this one listed too, and this was my number one that I want to see because, you know, I'm Mr. Shooting, was Rice, Carlisle, Mbako, Goody, and Rice, Carlisle, Goody, Mbako at the four for me. And renew, because all of those pieces are interchangeable. I'd love to see him go five out at some point, or run a pick and pop where you pull Renew's guy away from the hoop, and then Rice and Carlisle can drive with spot up shooters around them, including Renew. If the shot continues to develop, and be able to pick their guys, or if they're one on one with somebody they could beat, get to the rack. I love the idea of spreading those guys out. Whereas in the past, Indiana has been it's like the offense starts and slowly condenses towards the paint on every possession. Whereas instead, let's spread it out and create those lanes for driving And then if somebody helps, you've got a guy everywhere who can shoot the ball.
Yeah, that I called that the catch and shoot lineup: Rice, Carlisle, Mbako, Goody, and Renew. We'll do an episode at some point this offseason of the biggest swing skills that can really change the trajectory. I think no matter how you slice it, somewhere in the top three, you know, Malik Renew's ability to step out and shoot, whether you want to make it specifically Andy, his shooting ability, or just his ability to play better facing the basket, that's got to be one of the top two or three swing skills for this roster. Because if he can step out, I mean, he shot, you know, what, 35, 36% something from three last year on low volume. If he can maintain that efficiency and, say, double his attempts to where teams at least have to step out on him, that kind of lineup could have a real Nebraska-type feel to it, you know, where everybody's a threat, the lane is open, so you've got space for cutters. And you know, I mean, Renew being able to do that also would, you know, just open things up for what we project as the starting lineup as well. So that's a huge swing skill. But, you know, especially for a lineup like that, if Renew can be a big that can also shoot, that lineup's going to have a ton of defensive issues, but it may not matter if they're going down and scoring, you know, 2 points a possession when they're out there playing.
Yeah, I think you're right about the shooting with him. I think the other is just the playmaking in terms of putting the ball on the floor. There's a lot of times last year just took too many dribbles, got into traffic. Even when he would start from the outside or start from the elbow, some of those things, being able to be decisive, but make good decisions there. And with a group like that, you know, even if he's able to take a couple dribbles in, draw some attention, and then be able to, you know, somebody fills in behind him and he kicks it out for a three, I think you've got a group with any of those guys who could step in and fill that role as well. So you could still have him doing some things inside and opening things up for other people that way, even if it's on, you know, a drive, but just not quite the some of the drives we saw last year where he just got in too deep, tried to go through too many people. I think being able to know, hey, I've got four guys out here outside of this that I can kick the ball out to that can make a shot becomes pretty important there.
I think we all agree that the Rice-Carlisle lineups are the most exciting, right? I mean, just the two of them playing off each other. And some people have said, well, you know, Carlisle, now he'll get to play off the ball on us. We don't know that. I mean, they can. It looks like they both have kind of transferable skill sets. So if and the positive there is if one gets hurt or one gets in foul trouble, you just give the ball to the other.
I think the thing with those two guys is Rice is the more natural lead.
Yes.
And Carlisle is a better spot up shooter. So I think if you're playing them together, they kind of naturally fall in there. But the point is you've got two guards with combo skills that can, again, just attack from multiple places, which we just haven't seen.
Rice is the point guard. Like, I don't want people to be misled by that. Like, he is the point guard, but it's not like Carlisle is just a spot up shooter. He's more of a combo guy. And so if, let's say Carlisle has an all Big Ten defender on him one game, you can kind of pass those responsibilities over to Carlisle a bit and he'll not be completely out of place. It's not going to be like when Archie Miller made Trey Galloway bring the ball up or something, you know, early on in his career.
Yeah, Trey can do it now too. Trey can be that guy also now.
And we know Woodson likes that. He likes to have multiple guys who can get it up the floor, but it won't be out of place. And so those guys in some ways, again, Rice is the point guard, but they have interchangeable skills where you can use both of them in a bunch of creative ways. And you can run plays that you run with either one of them likely initiating, as opposed to, Rice has the ball in this place. That means they're running. The defense knows you're running this play. Well, no, now he's over there and Carlisle's here. And so you have to adjust to it. I think that is what makes these lineups really exciting, is that you can do multiple things with both of those guys, play one off the ball, play one on the ball, or have them share it. And then you get into the other versatility, which is Mbako can drive, shoot. He started passing better at the end of the year. He's got size. You could even put him back to the basket if you wanted on some sets and put Renew out on the floor. I just think that there is way more versatility in this group than there was last year, where everybody kind of fit into a neat little box. And if it worked, it worked. If it didn't, you're kind of screwed. You know, I mean, now you can kind of adjust, and I'll say it's going to be on the coaching staff to use them in versatile ways and to do these different things and to use these different lineups. And when they're in, play differently than you play when the starters are in. Like when Renew is at the five, you got to play differently than when Ballo is at the five, and you have to adjust things to fit the skill sets of the players that are in there. If you just go and fit everybody into boxes, that's where you get what you did this year, where it kind of just looked the same all the time, no matter who was in there. Peyton Sparks was in there. You played the exact same way when Khalil Ware was in there. And those guys don't have the same skills.
Well, I think you saw that from UConn as they went through. Yeah. You know, when Klingon was in, they'd played one way. And when the backup for him, I think Samson Johnson, I think was the guy's yes. name for him. Like all of it was, you know, pick and roll with that guy and slips to the basket, but you're not
lobs,
dumping yeah. it into him and whatever. So, yeah, I think you just, yeah, it seeing that variability and the shifts dependent upon the personnel is
it's the key to winning basketball
to see.
It's the key to winning basketball games long term is adjusting your system and what you're running to the team you have. Danny Hurley has proven it over the last 2 years. That's how you win championships. Jay Wright proved it for years. I mean, it's about you have to be flexible as much as your team has to be multi-talented. You know, it's both things have to be true.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, there have been some discussions this offseason about, you know, how some of the criticism of Woody from last season was a little bit unfair because the roster, both because of how it was constructed, which, you know, he was in charge of constructing it, and because of injuries, just didn't have enough players with multiple dimensions to do that. I do think there's some truth to that, but also...
Yeah, it's a fair comment. It is a fair comment.
Yeah, but also, you know, Indiana didn't take some opportunities that they had to try to play differently when different guys were out there. So I think they've fixed the personnel part on paper, right? Now, again, guys have to develop. There has to be chemistry. You have to avoid injuries. Like, those are all the obvious caveats in the offseason. But when you just look at this on paper, so many different ways to play. I'm curious, are you guys both, when you kind of pencil in your starting lineup, are you penciling in Galloway as the sixth man and Rice, Carlisle, and Bacco renew Ballo as the starters? Is that what you
yes.
assume yeah. will happen?
And I'll say this. Those are the five best players they should start. I mean, they are. And I love, you know, we love Trey Galloway. And look, somebody's going to be banged up at some point. Trey Galloway's going to start some games. Maybe he'll take advantage of it. Maybe he'll see like, well, he's giving more than Carlisle is or whatever. Let's give him a run at the starting spots. But starting the season, those are your five best players. And watch, I mean, if you don't believe that, go watch their highlights. They are the best five players on the team. There's a reason why they were brought in. I think it's interesting that Indiana is going to be bringing in three new starters, you know, and how many teams, I mean, it's going to be common across the country, but three new players that are all going to start. It's going to be fascinating to see how they gel together and how that works.
Starting is one thing, you know, but who plays in key moments, who closes is yeah, another. And just closes. Because Trey Galloway doesn't start doesn't mean he won't be a guy
doesn't
there.
Mean he won't close.
But also, you know, with Trey Galloway's free throw shooting issues, you know, sometimes he can struggle at the end of games. And if you have now Carlisle and Rice, who are better free throw shooters, you just have more options. And that's
agreed.
That's the theme of this, is there are just more options, more ways to play, more ways to A, take advantage of matchups, and B, help smooth out an off night from somebody. Because if Carlisle's shot just isn't falling one night, and he had some of those games last season, maybe he's only playing 20 minutes that night, and Tucker's getting more minutes, or Galloway's getting more minutes, or Goody. And Indiana just didn't have that luxury last season. No.
And here's the thing. With Galloway on the bench, it gives you the ability to use the bench, not just as a motivator, but as a, okay, it's 7 minutes in, this guy's giving us nothing. We know Trey will give us energy if nothing else. Get him in there. And you have a reliable option there. How it's been a long time since Indiana had consistently reliable options off the bench that wound up having a high usage. You've got a guy who can do that. And I agree with you too, Jared. If I was Trey Galloway this offseason, there is one thing I would be working on. I mean, you work out, you do all the things you do. Free throw shooting. Forget the three-point shot. I don't think it's coming.
Get your knee. Make your rehab. Do your knee rehab first.
Well, obviously. Then, yes. I mean, once you're working on your game, I think it's free throw shooting because you can provide a lot of value there. I don't think the three-point shot's coming. Maybe it gets incrementally better. It's not going to be 47% or whatever it was in that fluky year. But if he's in the game,
get more looks like that this year than he did last
probably,
year.
Probably, sure. But I'm just not confident that you're going to be able to rework it after 3 years of having it look you know, it's incrementally looked different, but it hasn't, we haven't gotten a massive change, and he was really
bad. It could
bad
get
last
back
year.
To the mid 30s though, which would be fine.
Maybe. And, you know, maybe he has time and whatever. It's mental with Trey. Like at this point, he proved he can make them. It's mental, but I would get to the free throw line and work free throws right now. That's the thing you need to do. Maybe that helps your release too, when you are shooting threes, but that's a guy who needs to be able to make his free throws, because I think he has a lot of value closing defensively and moving the offense. And so that's what he needs to be able to provide. Because if he's in there and he's shooting 50% from the free throw, and you already have a bad free throw shooter in Ballo, like you can't have two on the floor.
Yeah. So Andy, you know, the other thing that we can look at here is the bench. And I think we all agree that the all sub lineups have no place in college basketball. It's not smart. It's especially not smart when the lineups themselves don't make basketball sense, like the bench lineups that we used last year, which had no proven scoring and just, you know, guys were thrown out there and were asked to play roles they weren't really ready for. You know, I think you can already see, right, with Galloway and Goody, how we've already included them in these lineups, how sprinkling in a bench player here and there can work and you have more options. In the event that Mike Woodson decides to go with the all-sub lineup, and I think he's done it for three straight years, there's a lot of mouths to feed. Until proven otherwise, I'm just going to assume that's what happens in November and December, whether we like it or not. If that's the case, when you look at what they could put out there this year, it's a lineup that makes more basketball sense, at least. You know, people are asking, what role is Gabe Kupps going to play? I will be shocked if Kupps isn't getting 5 to 10 minutes a game, at least early in the season, as the backup point guard. That might not happen. My guess is that it will. And so if you just project out right now the bench lineup, you've got Gabe Kupps, Trey Galloway, Bryson Tucker, Luke Goody, and then, you know, insert backup big here, you know, or maybe you keep Ballo or Renew on the court, whatever. Again, I hope we don't see that lineup a ton. I think we will. But that lineup actually makes some sense, because you've got Kupps that can just be the point guard to get people ready. Galloway's your secondary creator. You know, Tucker is, I think, a guy who's going to score mostly in the mid-range and on cuts and in transition. Goody can space the floor, and you've got a big. Like, that lineup can work, especially against, you know, some of the non-conference opponents that you're going to face. So if Woody is going to do that, we know it caused major issues with Indiana's efficiency margin last year, because they got killed in any lineup with two or, you know, with two or more bench players out there. At least now it seems like that's a lineup that could tread water at a minimum. And if guys are making their shots, you know, could actually go on a run here or there, which is something that we didn't have. So if Woody's going to do it, I feel a little bit better about our ability to kind of survive those minutes than what we had this past season. And look, those minutes matter. They really matter, because those minutes all add up to your, you know, ultimate efficiency margin by the end of the season.
Yeah, I think the shooting of that group is a question mark outside of Goody, obviously, because we saw what backcourt lineups look like with Kupps and Trey last year. So I think that's, you know, what I think you could see, though, is do you try to play a little bit more? I think you can make this argument with any lineup, but is it a lineup where you want to play a little more up-tempo, push the pace? Tucker's going to be really good in transition. Yep. Goody, you talked about being able to, you know, spot up and make threes in transition where defense is scrambling and be able to do some of those things. Again, going back to how do you want to play with this group, I think you'd have to try something like that. So I would concur that I feel better about an all-bench lineup, but I do think there's some pretty clear deficiencies with that, certainly pending whatever backup big that you get. But you've got to figure out how do you accentuate what those guys do well, and you're going to have to hide a little bit of what maybe they don't do well in certain areas as well. But I think you definitely would have questions about the shooting and how you're able to take advantage of some of the, you know, how do you take advantage of what Tucker's ability really is, which, as you said before, is, you know, a bit of an unknown as you look through it that way. So and it was funny, because I was trying to kind of come up with a lineup that would include him in it. But it's like, you don't really know what you're going to get. I'll just throw it out there. Just, you know, this seems like a potentially intriguing defensive lineup where you've got Rice, Carlisle, Galloway, Tucker, who can all kind of switch whatever, and then Ballo protecting the rim. And do you have, can you really get out and run with some of those guys? I don't really, you know, Tucker, I think he's got a good wingspan, not super big yet to be able to guard. But if you play a team that wants to play small, Maybe you can do that and you can switch 1 through 4 and then and do some things that way. So it's like, could he be effective and disruptive in a scenario like that? But again, I think you're going to want to play at a fast pace to take advantage of some of the things that he does well in terms of getting up and down the court and being able to slash a little bit.
You know, and it's always a little bit risky trying to plug a freshman into a defensive lineup because you have no idea. And that's, you know,
that, especially running the system that IU runs, that's, you know, he's going to be in it for the first time because nobody else runs it. I mean, very few people.
And this is the point that I want to hit. We fight this every offseason where you look, especially new guys that come in, you can get a good feel for their offensive stats. You know, you can watch film and highlights, and a lot of that stuff is offensive stuff. It can be hard to project the defense forward. You know, we had conversations last offseason, you know, wow, look at this length. You know, if Caleb Banks gets better and Anthony Walker, they could really have some devastating defensive lineups with the way that Woody wants to play. And it never came together. Yeah, never. You know, again, it's all theory in the offseason, and it sounded good at the time.
It was devastating, just not really in the right way.
Yeah. Devastating for us, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, do you remember early season games where Anthony Walker had no idea what he was supposed to be doing, and he was a senior? Just
and that's a veteran. Again,
yeah, I mean, it's a system that nobody else runs, and it's, I mean, I don't know who else runs it, but it's very rare. Everybody runs man help, not nail slot rim. And it's just, they have to, you know, learn it very fast and get used to it. And I think that's why, you know, I do hear a lot of people spiking the football in the offseason, and certainly everybody should be excited about the guys Indiana has picked up. They really should be. And we are 100% on board with the guys they picked up. At the very least, we love Indiana. We want to watch talented players play, and you're going to get a lot of talent on the floor for Indiana, and that'll be fun no matter
what.
I had a lot
this
of fun.
This is going to be more fun no matter what.
Agreed. And I loved watching Khalil Ware this year, but where it got me down was some of the other deficiencies. But you have to remember that last year, entering the season, and we were correct, there was a lot of talent on that team. It just, we kept saying, hey, January, we'll know what we have. And that team just never came together. It didn't. There were games where they had stretches where it looked real good, and you're kind of like, where's this been? And then it would go away. So it could take these guys have never played together before. There's a lot of new players. They're running new systems that they've never been in before. It's not, you know, it's not like Mike Woodson runs a standard motion offense that they play other places and you probably played in high school or whatever. This is completely new, completely different, and the defense is completely new. It's a lot to learn in a short period of time. These guys are going to need some time to figure it out. Likely they can't wait too long. Last year they gave up the entire non-conference schedule trying to figure it out. Can't happen again.
I think the argument or the hope would be that this team can outscore its issues early on.
I would agree.
I think there are going to be defensive issues, and that, you know, the offensive system is different, but it's, there's a lot of pick and roll, and there's some stuff that these guys are
some
used
standard
to.
Elements. Yes. But I'll say this, the thing that's going to benefit Indiana while they figured that out is the fact that all of the transfer portal, it's happening everywhere. And so other teams are going to have to figure themselves out too. And so you could have two teams playing each other looking like newborn deer. And, you know, Indiana just has more offensive, you know, firepower, and the other team doesn't. And so just scrambling around, but they're better. And so that's the benefit this year, I think, is that you do have all this talent. You have all this, you have guys who've proven they can do it as well. Mbako, Ballo, you know, the whole starting lineup essentially that we just named has proven they can play at the college level. You're not banking on a true freshman or a guy coming in from Oregon who we don't know what we're going to get from him, but we assume it'll be good. You've got proven commodities. And I think that's what,
done it.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's what Indiana, and again, on the bench, Galloway, Goody, both done it. Like, I think that's where Indiana is going to be a step ahead of other people and maybe able to get off to a good start this year that they didn't get last year.
You know, it's interesting, Andy. You think back to Mike Woodson's first season, and, you know, we've been talking about questions that we have about the offense all along. But that first season, the defense was really good. I mean, it was a top 25 defense, if I recall correctly. I mean, Xavier Johnson obviously was a breath of fresh air as just a point guard who could get out and really defend, you know, other lead guards. And I feel like to a certain extent, a lot of IU fans have been somewhat anchored to that defensive success from year one. Just kind of thinking, okay, this is a, you know, a defensive program. You know, last offseason, I mean, I guess I'd have to go back and listen, but I feel like we were more confident about what that team would look like defensively than we were offensively. You know, turned out neither side of the ball was very good. But there was a large portion of that season where it felt like the defense was letting us down even more than the offense. And as you go into this offseason, you know, and maybe last season, everything being so bad kind of wiped the slate clean, but it's really easy to see how these pieces fit offensively. And I'm, you know, maybe I'm more bullish than anybody. Like I said, in the Banner moment, I think this is a top 25 offense. There's so much talent there and so many guys who have demonstrated they can score at a high level. I think these pieces are going to fit offensively. I mean, I think even if the coaching is everything we don't want it to be, I think these guys are just talented enough to go score points. But I have real questions defensively because we've, you know, the way that we run defense doesn't seem very good for Malik Renew. You know, McKenzie Mbako struggled. Maybe he'll be better this year. Do you expect, I know this is kind of an impossible question to ask, but you know, we've been talking about adjustments we'd like to see offensively. Do you expect to see Indiana do anything different defensively? Do you think there are some specific things they should do with this set of personnel? Because I think having legitimate defense, like, could this be a top 50 defense? That's much less clear to me than whether this could be a top 25 offense. And a top 25 offense can get you to the second weekend of the tournament, even if your defense isn't very good. But you're probably not going to go much further, you know, if your defense isn't a little bit better. And we've talked about how, you know, kind of possession by possession defense is maybe a little bit overrated in this age of college basketball. And it's more, can you be elite situationally when you need to be? And we'll have some athletes to do that. But it's still, with the way that this defense has given up three-pointers and just the inconsistency of it, you know, without X at an elite level and tracing at elite level down low, I think it's fair to have a lot of questions about what this is going to look like defensively.
Yeah, I would agree. I think when you look at it, among IU's bigger defensive issues last year was one, Malik Renew getting in foul trouble and kind of how he was able to guard and not guard. And two was McKenzie Mbako, and he certainly was lost defensively a whole lot less toward the end of the season than he was on the other side. But he also was going to struggle a little bit if you had a quicker three who could put the ball on the floor and do that. Those two things are still there. You've changed a lot of things around them. And so that's where I think as you look about pieces one way or the other, like two of the pieces that were challenging defensively are still there. Now, they're another year into the system. I think in Mbako's case in particular, as he gets through another offseason and understands a little bit more of what's expected from him on that end of the floor, I think it's reasonable to expect at least some progression. But to a certain extent, he's going to still be playing out of position. And so you've got to figure out how to do those things. I think in Rice and Carlisle, you've got a couple guys who can put pressure on the ball, which is obviously helpful for what they want to do. But I don't think, you know, I would be surprised if the scheme changes in any meaningful way. It's really been what they've tried to do. They've made tweaks to it in stretches over the course of time. And I think one of the reasons, to go back to where you started with this, was why, you know, we may have expected the defense to be better, was that that's something that Woodson said every offseason about spending a ton of time getting the defense right and not being able to get to the offense. And that was it's certainly a common refrain in his first offseason leading up to the season. And you kind of saw the fruits of that, or at least the presumed fruits of that in that season. It just hasn't been able to continue. And I don't know exactly what you attribute that to, but I would be surprised if it's going to change in any dramatic way. So you're going to have some growing pains early, as we've talked about, what people know and how long to stay and help versus when to get out and do some of those things. You're going to have that. I would be surprised if you didn't have that, given the number of new faces that you really have. And, you know, short of, you know, pretty easy to lay out for Balo, like, here's what we need you to do. But, you know, for I think a lot of the other guys, it's not quite that simple.
Yeah, I think defensively what you might see is what they've done in the past, was just maybe they'll run the pure version of the defense for a while and see what happens. But I think if there are adjustments, all they will be is don't help as much. And they close down the amount of help they give, and how far they help off their own men. And so we've seen that in the past where guys just don't help as far off. But it usually just winds up going back to the regular system at some point. So I don't think we're not going to see a massive sea change. This is what Woodson runs. It's what he's always run. It's what he's going to run, just like the offense. This is what he's run. It's what he ran here, or he's run here. It's what he's going to continue to run. He might throw some wrinkles in, as we've seen that in the past, like going heavy, heavy pick and roll, doing the high elbow curl and pop for TJD to drive. I mean, you know, things like that. But you're not going to see a big overarching change, I don't think. I think we were promised that last year. And when that didn't happen, you kind of know it is what it is. And it's going to be what it's going to be. Just get more talented players to run it, and maybe it'll be more successful. But again, if it doesn't work with these guys, you got to start questioning sort of everything in that regard. But I do think the defense won't change. I think you're exactly right, Jared. I think this will be an offensive team, not a defensive team. I think they have the talent and athleticism to be a defensive team. But a lot of defense is fitting together and learning each other and growing together. And these guys are all being slammed together in an offseason.
And, you know, and maybe that's the big hope, is that the defense is probably going to be up and down and have some really bad nights. And maybe we'll win those games because we'll be able to put up 90 this year, you know. But I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of consternation about the defense. But, you know, I look to Alabama as an example of a team that was really inconsistent defensively all season long. But they got into the tournament, and at times when they had to get stops because they had the athletes, when those guys were bought in 100% just because of their talent and athleticism, they were able to get stops. And maybe that's what this Indiana team becomes at its best. You know, a team that's really explosive offensively all season long, even if there's a little bit of inconsistency from new guys playing together and that kind of thing. But, you know, the defense comes through enough at the end that you can get those big stops that you need, so that the other team only gets 76 points instead of, you know, 82, you know, and you're out there, you know, throwing up 80. So I think that's the hope and maybe the ideal vision for what this team can be. But I don't think it's going to be kind of, you know, a lockdown defense throughout the season by any means. But it may not have to be. You know, I mean, it's Andy, it kind of seems like IU basketball and IU football. There's a lot of good feelings about the offense here in the offseason. And then everybody's just like, well, let's just outscore people because, you know, I don't know how we're going to get stops. So, you know, there's a lot of ways to win. We talk all the time about, you know, a game of basketball is just a big math problem that you have to solve. And if Indiana's outscoring teams, then they're going to have a lot more margin for error. There just was no margin for error last year. So every defensive breakdown felt like it was monumental because you just didn't have confidence in being able to go down on the other end and consistently get buckets. And maybe at least that'll change, especially if the three-point volume can kick up to reasonable levels, which is still a valid question to have about the offense, and we'll have to see. Any final thoughts, gentlemen, before we sign off for the evening?
No, lots of good combinations to think about. Really, as we've said before, feels like backup big is still on the shopping list at this point, and then figure out whether they're going to use the other scholarship or not. But I think the glaring hole at this point is having another big guy who can step in to give Ballo some rest and be a backup from a foul perspective and those kinds of things. So once you have that, maybe there's other combinations that come to the forefront, but I think certainly even with what we know so far, some interesting ones to think about.
Ryan, have you approached your SI bosses about doing a follow-up to the Rabbit Hunter piece on Mike Woodson and doing a nice profile on Mike Woodson?
You know, I'm just feeling my way through early on, guys. You know, that's down the road stuff. So people have already been like, well, finally Indiana will get on the cover at some point. I'm like, excuse me, whoa. Whoa, guys. I'm not there. Yeah,
how much pull do you have there, Phillips? Yeah.
Not a whole lot yet. I spent 8 years of the big lead getting here, and gonna have to take some more time to get to that level. But I'll certainly push it in editorial meetings. But let's give it time. Give it time.
Very nice. Very nice. All right, everybody. Well, that is going to do it for us on this week's edition of the Assembly Call. If you want to see us do the show live, you can join us at assemblycall.com on Thursday nights for the live broadcast of our Assembly Call radio recording. Thank you to Bob Thompson for producing our music. Thank you, as always, to John Ringer of rigdesign.com for designing our logos. And we thank you for listening. We'll be back to talk IU hoops again with you next Thursday. Until then.
Take it from me, Christian Wofford. Keep your elbows in and your eyes on the rim. Go Hoosiers.
I think they've gotten enough show.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out.
That's defense.